We're going to probe the issues of racism and the faith even deeper today here on the Line of Fire, and some things happening in Lexington, Kentucky that the whole nation needs to know about.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
I am truly amazed. Yeah. I'm holding in my hands, a beautiful, it's beautiful. Yeah. It's the real kosher Jesus. It's out. Boy, I mean, the book is beautifully produced. It's April 2nd, which means it's a day before it was even supposed to be released. And the book is in my hands. Listen, January 19th, God laid it on my heart that I was to write this book. That's when the plan, the idea, the thought, the concept to write The Real Kosher Jesus dropped into my heart. January 19th, up late in prayer the night before, January 18th on Wednesday night, burdened, gripped that I was supposed to say something regarding my friend Rabbi Shmuley's book, Kosher Jesus. And then, boy, overwhelmed, Thursday during the day with a burden, write your own book, write the real story, write The Real Kosher Jesus. Less than 2.5 months, clearly under 2.5 months from the day the Lord laid on my heart to write the book. Not that just the book is finished, but the book is published in my hand. We'll tell you how you can get copies later in the broadcast. But thanks for joining me and sharing the joy today on The Line of Fire. May the Lord use this book to open up the eyes of millions of Christians and Jews around the world. Thanks for joining us this Monday on The Line of Fire. A bunch of important things we are going to cover. 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. Online, askdrbrown.org. Click on The Line of Fire. If you go to my Facebook page, Ask Dr. Brown, SDR Brown on Facebook, you will see firsthand a copy of the book. I'm holding it in my hand, and you can see it's out. It's really here. Okay. You might think that I should quit while I'm ahead and not push an issue too far, which is sure only to generate more controversy and perhaps more misunderstanding. But I am determined not to let go of this subject. I'm determined to further probe this question, this issue of racism. And is there unconscious racism on my end? Is there unconscious racism blind spots on my end as a white man, follower of Jesus? Is there racism, unconscious racism in African-American circles, black circles, and it's a blind spot there? Are we missing each other? Are there things we need to address? I am determined to continue to probe for understanding here. That's how committed I am to the whole body. That's how committed I am to be clean and right before the Lord Jesus. That's how committed I am to speak the truth in love and to listen to the truth in love. I was in New York Saturday night, had a wonderful time, meet and greet those that I got to share with Saturday night, and those listening for the first time, welcome to the broadcast. Thanks for being a part of it. It was great to meet so many of you face-to-face Saturday and at different venues while I was in New York in the last week. But we got a call a Friday afternoon from Tara in Silver Spring. And it got the attention of some of the folks that I spoke with at the meet and greet as well. And Tara, if you're listening, what a wonderful job. What a gracious call asking me to consider perspectives from the black audience, asking me to consider perspectives to examine myself and to listen and to think. Ask as graciously as anyone could possibly ask. And I so am indebted to you, Tara, for the nature of your call. Because it helps, it models things for everyone to say, hey, there's a great way to get people to think, and it's very difficult to resist words that are spoken with such grace and love. So as promised, I went back and listened to a phone call in question. We're going to play a clip for you, then we're going to dive in. We will work through controversy with wisdom, with truth and love, because we are one in Jesus. We are one in the Lord.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Hey, friends. Welcome back to The Line of Fire. 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. Online, askdrbrown.org. Okay. We are going to talk through something right here on The Line of Fire. I want to give the background, all right? A week ago Monday, I did a program asking a question regarding the tragic killing of Trayvon Martin. I was just trying to understand one particular aspect, okay? Just one particular aspect, namely the hoodie issue. I had understood from a quote from the mayor of Philadelphia the previous year, hoodies were associated with certain dress that was considered negative, that sent a wrong message. And now it seemed to be sending a different message. So I just asked that question, and I knew it was a sensitive issue, but I was just trying to gain understanding there. And over the course of the show, I believe I referred to the killing as tragic. I didn't say that right at the outset. For whatever reason, I apologize, because certainly it's a tragedy when a 17-year-old kid is shot that never should have been shot. Whatever the scenario, I think everyone agrees, including George Zimmerman, that the thing never should have come down the way it did, and Trayvon never should have been shot and killed. Tragedy. I can't imagine losing one of our kids at when they were 17 through something like this. So no question, no dispute about that. But over the course of the show, we got flooded with calls. We were unable to take all the calls. But I got a letter afterwards that I then read on the Friday broadcast, with a very, very respectful, gracious letter from a black listener. And he basically felt there were racist issues on my end. And you know, why is it that people like me, we just emphasize conservative Christianity and we don't talk about slavery or segregation, these other things? Like, well, what are you talking about? Of course I bring those things up. And how many times have you heard me quote Martin Luther King? And how many times have you heard me reference how Christian could America have ever been in the past if in fact we had slavery and we had segregation and these other things? Whatever Christianity we had, there were obviously defects, etc. I've always said those things. I've always been clear that we need one another in the body. And I simply tried to raise, you know, I get concerned because I feel like you can't even raise other issues. That if I take issue with Mr. Obama over his policies, that someone's going to accuse me of racism. So there was a call-in question at the beginning of the show where I was accused of cutting a caller off and being insensitive to that, whereas I let a white law enforcement gentleman, a policeman, speak at length later in the broadcast. Well, also I let speak at length a black law enforcement officer, a man actually who works in the prisons. That was in the second half hour of the first hour. So I let them both speak at length as much time as I had because they were in law enforcement. That's why. Because they had a unique perspective that I thought was important to hear. So I let them both speak at length. But as promised, I went back to listen to that first call from iKarma. Now, everything up to the point where I began to differ, I so appreciated the information, the perspective, and all of that. Very, very much so, okay? Points were made in a gracious manner. References were made. I don't take issue with any of that. The call lasted for almost 4 minutes, which is very long for me to have a caller on when I see all the phones jammed, all right? And I want to get your input. I want your honest feedback. I want you to tell me if you're black listeners, if you're white listeners. I hate even to make that distinction, because especially for followers of Jesus, there's not racial division in God's sight. And I don't look at it, and I don't believe we should look at it. We should recognize where there are issues and address them. We should heed the Martin Luther King comment that what matters is the quality of the person's character. Yes? So I want you to tell me honestly. Your opinion, especially if you've been listening to the broadcast for a while, is it me? Are there blind spots that I'm just not seeing and sensitive to? Or is there a sensitivity sometimes on the other side of the issue that needs to be addressed? I want to hear from you honestly. All right, 866-34-TRUTH. So here's the part of the call where I took issue. Go ahead, Joey. here's the deal. I just wanted to address one thing on my program, question
you
I have.
You want to address the hoodie because white people don't want to address racism.
No, Carmen, listen, I see reverse racism constantly.
Right.
I see white bashing.
That's what white people want to do. They want to reverse.
I see ugly. Ugly. You got to listen to me. I have never been a racist in my life. Okay, now, I played the part. This is where I put the caller on hold. Unless someone is like completely nasty and crazy and over the top and violating all of our rules of communication, I will not hang up on someone. And even then, I don't believe I do. I'll put them on hold so they can keep listening. But after going back and forth, when I was having to talk over iKarma, at that point, for the sake of listeners, because it's not good radio if we're trying to talk over each other, I put her on hold, okay? Which means she can listen to the rest of what I say before I go to the next call. Now, why did I take issue? It's because of this white people thing. That bothers me. That to me is unfair. That to me is judgmental. White people don't want to talk about racism. Now, suddenly now, it's my show, okay? And I'm raising a question of something I'm trying to sort out culturally because I don't know any more about the tragic killing than you do. I read the same news reports. I see the same clips. I get the same information, all right? I may be diligent in it. I may have other people sending me links, but I don't have secrets here, all right? I have some people that have strong opinions because they're close to similar things, but I don't have inside information. So, when someone now is going to start talking to me about white people this and white people that, frankly, I'm going to take exception to. I would love to meet iKarma face to face, and I'm sure if she's a follower of Jesus, we could have some wonderful fellowship in the Lord, all right? And we could have a civil interaction that would be gracious and helpful. But when someone's going to start to talk to me about white people, the white people don't want to address racism. Well, first, that generalization is a racist statement. White people don't want to address racism. How much of the civil rights movement was aided and abetted by white people who hated racism? Who was it that fought to end slavery but white people, like William Wilberforce and other white people who were beaten and lost jobs here in America, and some suffered severely because they stood against slavery here in America, and others because they stood against segregation. So to say white people, that generalization, that concerns me. That to me has racist elements. And that one is applied to me that I can't even address a simple question because white people don't want to address racism. No, I'm not going to have that extended conversation at that point on the broadcast. Was I wrong? And let me go a little further here. Okay, let me go further. To this day, I see it on a regular basis that criticism of Mr. Obama is called racism. Here, I'll give you an example. Leaders of the NAACP recently met with Franklin Graham because of his questioning whether Mr. Obama is a genuine Christian, and saying how the Muslim world sees him as Muslim. And Franklin Graham apologized. NAACP said that basically the comments give place to racism or racist-based. I don't have the exact quote in front of me. I don't understand that. If Bill Clinton said he was a Christian, there were plenty of evangelical Christians that questioned that. When Al Gore said he was a Christian, there are plenty of evangelical Christians who question that. When George Bush said he was a Christian, there are plenty of liberal Christians who question that. Depending on how we define Christian, you better believe we're going to question whether Mr. Obama was Christian or Bill Clinton was Christian. And others will question whether George Bush was Christian and so on. I understand that. What's that got to do with race? And most Muslims are not black. Islam is not race-based. So to say that the Muslim world looks at him as Muslim, what's that got to do with race? I honestly don't understand it. I still think there's an elephant in the room that needs to be addressed. And as long as it can just be turned around and thrown at folks like me because I have white skin, then I think something's being missed. So what do you think? 866 3 for Truth. Marcus in New Mexico, you will be first up, but I'm ready to hear from you. I honestly want your perspective. 866-348-7884. I'm determined, for the sake of unity in the body and for the sake of me hearing you and you hearing me, that we pursue this a little bit further. Got a lot more things to talk about, but we're parking here for a little while. Welcome your calls. Welcome your feedback right here on the Line of Fire. Change the world.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks, friends, for joining us on the Line of Fire. Phone lines are lit up. I want to get straight to your calls, 866-34-TRUTH. And again, the exciting announcement, the Real Kosher Jesus book is out in my hands. I'll tell you in a few minutes how you can get copies of it if you haven't pre-ordered already. I'll tell you you can get the paperback or our exclusive hardcover edition, 866-34-TRUTH. We're probing more deeply the issues of racism and accusations of racism. And if perhaps there can be hypersensitivities on both sides that we need to walk through. Fair enough? 866-34-TRUTH. Marcus in Totales, New Mexico, thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
How's it going, Dr. Brown?
Very well. Thank you, sir.
Good, good. I think you wanted us to identify. African-American caller calling frequently. Love the show, primarily because you typically steer away from, what is it, even if it's a hot button issue, you steer away from the sensational portion of that. But this is one topic that it's hard to discuss without a lot of what we've seen, I guess, over the last week. It seems like this is, in a lot of ways, extended from the Martin case that you talked about last week.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Ultimately, what I was going to say is I think that in order to get over it, I think the way that we discuss issues of ethnicity have a lot to do with a lot of the ways that we go astray in speaking about Scripture, because I think oftentimes we get wrapped up in the biases that we all carry, no matter what perspective that we come from. I think growing up in the society, just like it's impossible to grow up immune to, as a man, sexual temptations, or as a woman, you know, certain materialisms that the television markets do. I think we all have this common tie of growing up in a society that is just racially charged. And so the first thing that we all have to do, at least that helped me as a black man, is to appreciate the ways that even though I spent most of my life growing up and through the Rodney King era as a victim of profiling, as one who deals with a lot of biases, I had to realize that my own biases were still a problem, and they couldn't fix society, but they could hinder me. So to say it this way, there's only so much of my finger pointing at society that could help my own problems in getting over the things that society was presenting to me as obstacles to truly being who I need to be as a Christian. And I think that's the problem in the church now. I think so many of us have a problem and a fear of admitting our biases, that these issues stay emotionally charged, and they don't come into the realm of objective kind of discussion, fact-checking. I used to work in the criminal justice system, and so when I heard the police officer call in the case last week, I was kind of disturbed because one of the things that, you know, came to mind was his discussion of how in Florida so many were the rates of black 40,
he said it was 42-1 white exactly. On black on white crime in the region where he was in Florida.
Exactly. But one of the ways that, to me, that's kind of a symbol of how well we look at these issues in a biased way is that if he's in law enforcement, he understands that the incarceration rates are so heavily slanted in terms of the incarceration rates of African Americans are epidemic.
Yeah, in fact, Marcus, the law enforcement gentleman who called at the end of the show shared a lot of the perspective in terms of where I was coming from, but had one last comment he wanted to make when we were going off the air, and I didn't have a chance to get to it, so I had him tell Andrew, our call screener, and then Andrew conveyed it to me so I could share it in the next broadcast. And he felt that there was racism involved in the larger issue that he said, for example, in his neighborhood – it's 15% black, but the prison population is 85% black. And to me, you know, these are, here's the way I look at it. When I hear these stats, Marcus, it's heartbreaking to me. And I don't know what the answers are, because there's so much of a vicious cycle in terms of the broken family and different things. So the last thing in my mind is to point a finger or to blame either side or either race, and to say, boy, what can we do to fix this? This is an agonizing problem. And I've said on the air, for example, I did a show some time back about the high abortion rate in the black community, and Planned Parenthood putting abortion clinics in the poorer communities. And when you go back to their origins, they want it to do ethnic cleansing. They want it to get rid of certain races and peoples that it didn't feel were as valuable. And I've talked about this as a terrible attack on the black community, and said that God must have exceptional purposes for the black community. And we see how Satan's trying to attack and destroy. So I've made those kind of comments in solidarity with the black community, to say, less I'm doing is pointing a finger. I'm saying these are agonizing problems. What can we do to deal with them? Marcus, listen, I've got to run, get to some of the calls, but thank you, sir, for the call. Michelle in Washington, D.C., we're a little short on time, but please weigh in. Thank you. Yes, hello, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Yes, please, go ahead.
I know a lot of times people often use the race card in situations. However, in regards to this particular radio show, I don't see that. I just think that people have their opinions, and oftentimes people use that their races as a way to just point the finger. So that's all I have to say.
Well, thank you for sharing that. Thank you for being so concise and clear. I appreciate that. 866-34-TRUTH. Listen, I'd be thrilled if every one of you had the same perspective as Michelle had. That would bless me, because that's my heart. And I'm going to tell you why more on the other side of the break. But feel free to call and differ. That's why I'm having this show. All right? My goal is not to prove myself righteous or to prove someone else wrong. My goal is to advance the gospel of Jesus. My goal is to move forward in the Lord. I did a pastor's meeting in New York City Thursday morning, and it was reflective of the city. There were Hispanic pastors, black pastors, white pastors. I would have felt it was an absolute failure if I was there sitting around the table with a bunch of white guys in New York. It's like, where's the diversity of the city represented here at this table? I'm here for the body. I'm here to serve the body. God knows that's my heart, but I want to hear from you. 866-34-TRUTH. Okay, we've decided, in celebration of the release of Real Kosher Jesus, to do something special. If you want to get the paperback version, we've got a special resource offer for just $20. You get the paperback version of The Real Kosher Jesus, 247 pages, beautifully produced, the most eye-opening book you'll read about who Jesus is, who Jesus was, and a great book to give to your Jewish friends. That book, plus my DVD lecture, my outreach. This is an unprecedented event. Here, a prominent Messianic Jew doing an outreach lecture at Hebrew University a little over a year ago. The DVD and the book, just $20 postage paid for both resources. If you want to get the hardcover, just $30 postage paid, the book and the DVD. So a great deal on great resources that will bless you and change many Jewish lives. 1-800-278-9978 to order. That's 1-800-278-9978. One more time, 1-800-278-9978. I appreciate what Marcus said, that I don't play into the sensationalistic aspects and things, because, friends, we're going to give account to God one day, and our job is to glorify Jesus while we have breath. This is serious business. Thanks for listening. We'll be back with so much more.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
I want to go straight back to the calls today. 866-34-TRUTH. For those of you who've listened to this broadcast for a period of time, because that's the only way to be fair, all right? If you've listened to me a number of times, if you know me over the years, if you've read my stuff, if you heard me speak, but in particular, if you listen to this broadcast over a period of time, are there racial insensitivities on my part? Is it that certain things are such hot-button issues you can't even touch them? Is it unwise for me as a white man, some would call me, to even address certain issues of this sensitivity? Or is it important for the kingdom to advance that we talk honestly about these things? 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. I have different stories here online. I'm looking at different links. Other tragedies of, for example, a white teenager who was killed by a black gang and they told him, "You're getting what you deserve, whitey," those kinds of things. I don't hear national outcries the same way. I've got a list of stories like that in front of me. I don't hear national outcries about this the same way as we heard about the tragic killing of Trayvon Martin. And blood is blood. A human life is a human life, is it not? A life lost is a life lost. And racism is racism, be it black on white or white on black. And yet what I sometimes hear is that, well, racism one way is somehow justified. No, racism anyway is never justified. It's never justified. And if I can't take issue with Mr. Obama on his pro-homosexual, pro-abortion policies, I cannot do that, respecting him and still praying that God would get hold of him and make him the greatest president in American history, if I can't do that without someone perceiving racist motivation in me, then I tell that person, with all respect, look in the mirror, because the racism is not coming from me. Now, that's my perspective. I want to hear from you. Honestly. And please understand, I want to say this last thing. I have a deep heart to identify. What I mean is, when I go to other countries, I deeply identify with the people where I'm speaking. I don't come in as some American who's got all the answers. I come in there to serve, number one. But I'm able to join with them, and instead of becoming they, it becomes we. So very deeply in my heart, I identify with the black Christian community. And for whatever reason, as a Jew, I feel a special solidarity with the black Christian community. Hard for me to articulate exactly why. It could be shared heritage of slavery and background. It could be at different times in history oppressed minorities and things like that. It could be just kind of a black and Jewish soulfulness that's there. But I feel a deeper solidarity with my black Christian friends than many, many others. So these things concern me when people would feel that there are racial insensitivities on my end. Okay, Edward in Hanover, Maryland, welcome, sir, to the Line of Fire.
Thank you. I have listened to your show for a long time, and I personally can say that I have never heard any racial insensitivity that you have ever put out. Now, when people discuss certain things, it's almost like you can't touch the topic because it might explode into a racial tension or whatever. Because what you were talking about, Obama, okay, I'm an African-American myself, and I have to question some of Obama's, you know, processes and everything. Am I being a racist to my own people? I don't think so. The whole thing is that some people cannot process the fact that, okay, everybody does wrong, black, white, whatever.
Yes. Yes.
And if they are doing wrong, you are to call them on it.
Yeah. And Edward, you're straight to the point. You've articulated it correctly. And I, in many ways, I wanted to root for Mr. Obama more because he was our first black president. And as a married man, not a divorced man. But Edward, thank you so much for the call and the gracious words. We'll be back. Much more.
God of light, hear our cry.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Before we go back to the phones, yes, I'm holding in my hands beautifully produced, great cover. I'm so impressed with the job that Frontline Books did to get this out. The Real Kosher Jesus, Revealing the Mysteries of the Hidden Messiah. January 19th, the day the Lord laid it on my heart to write the book. April 2nd, I'm holding it in my hand. Can you imagine this? Lee Strobel, New York Times bestselling author of The Case for Christ, said this. It's on the front cover. Michael Brown is a compelling voice in the critically important debate over the true identity of Jesus of Nazareth. Someone just asked me a question. What did Rabbi Shmuley think of the book? Well, here's his full endorsement. We have a shortened form on the back, but here's his full endorsement. They say that imitation is the ultimate form of flattery, and by this standard, I should be highly grateful that my dear friend and constant debating partner, Dr. Michael Brown, is now publishing his new book, The Real Kosher Jesus, modeled on my original Kosher Jesus. But Mike and I have so much history and religious, historical, and social values debate that we have gone beyond being only respectful public adversaries, which will certainly continue until he renounces his adopted faith to return to the Judaism to which he was born, to being friends with deep affection between us, even as we disagree passionately on the issues. Mike wants to serve God. I don't doubt that. The proper way for a Christian to serve God is within his faith, and the proper way for a Jew to do so is within his. In this book, Mike fights back against my Kosher Jesus book. And while his arguments are utterly futile against my intellectual onslaught, you have to give him credit for trying. And yes, I say this both seriously and tongue-in-cheek. God bless you, Mike, and I look forward to many more debates. 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. Back to the phones. Aubrey in New York City, thank you so much for calling the Line of Fire.
Hi. I just wanted to say, I'm black. I just wanted to say that I heard the snippet of the caller, the call, and I've always felt that the in terms of racial hostilities and you know, racism in this country, I think for the most part, I believe the ball now, and has been for a while, has been in the black community court. Time for us to forgive. We've had lots of pastors, lots of public intellectuals get up. No one has ever, and complained about racism, no one has ever preached forgiveness to black people in America. And I think it's so important that we should start saying, and, you know, as Christians especially, that it's time to forgive. And I think that that might be the main issue here. You know, where you hear the rawness of emotion in so many black people when it comes to race, you know, a generation even of black people who haven't experienced the type of racism that we hear of from our elders, and we certainly didn't experience slavery. And I think for lots of us, we grow up in homes where we hear, you know, side comments where, you know, oh, those people are racist, you know, in referencing white people. We hear lots of little racist things, like what used to be maybe more popular, or what I used to hear that happened in white families, you know, white communities. So, you know, their children might say racist things because, you know, their parents offhandedly did, said or did racist things. I think we've taken in the black community that sort of thing on. And you have, there's like a rawness of emotion simply because we haven't forgiven. And I think we're carrying the offenses of previous generations that even older black generations don't carry. And I think it's really time, and especially for Christians, I think we're very guilty of making maybe blackness and racism an idol to us, where we disregard truth. You know, we can vote for a president like Obama and not see and not hear the wickedness, the just ultimate wickedness of just the things that he believes in, and not just him, but like people on the left, liberals. You know, black people vote for liberals. Black Christians vote for liberals, and you say without a sense of discernment of what they're voting for. And I just think it's really time that black people be honest. And, you know, just I just pray that God's Holy Spirit will just be poured out on us in this country, because I really think now, you know, the ball is in black people's court, and it's really time to just ask God for forgiveness, begin to forgive white people in this country, and really start to move on, because there's no reason for this rawness of emotion, honestly.
You cannot
hear, you know, a white person, you're constantly charging them and asking them to be guilty for something that a previous generation of white people did. It's wrong.
Yeah, And Aubrey, I appreciate your thoughts and the careful way that you've articulated them. Whoever we are, God commands us to be forgiving. Whatever's been done to us, that has to be our posture. And anything that becomes a stronghold, as you said, blackness could be an idol. Yeah. Jewishness could be an idol. Maleness, femaleness, being an American, whatever it is, there are things that can become idols. And it obscures our vision. You know, I've been to Germany probably about a dozen times to minister. And here, this is just a little over a generation back, Germans were responsible for killing 2/3 of European Jews, 6 million people, 1.5 million children and babies. And it's been interesting to see that I felt a special love for the German people. And I've been in so many meetings with Christians where they feel they have to repent and ask forgiveness again. And you say, hey, that you've done that, you know, move on with your life.
Yeah.
And, you know, and look, there are certainly racial strongholds all over America. And I don't believe that there's total equality in our culture. But let's also remember that we were told that with a black president, things would change. I actually felt that if it wasn't the right person in office that could have a unifying effect and would stand for righteousness, that it could actually accentuate racial division. But let's remember that Mr. Obama is our president. The biggest number, just in bulk of people who voted, would be white people who voted for Mr. Obama to be president. So these were people who wanted to see something positive come out of this. But Aubrey, really, your comments stand very strong on their own, and I want to see what other callers have to say as well. So thank you so much for weighing in. I deeply appreciate that. 866-34-TRUTH. Christine in Elizabeth, New Jersey, thanks so much for calling the Line of Fire.
Hi, Michael. My name is Christine. I just wanted to call and weigh in on the topic that you're speaking of today.
Yes.
I've listened to your show for some time, and I just wanted to let you know that I don't believe that there was any racial undertones in what you were saying with the caller. And, you know, as far as, like, the Trayvon Martin situation that's happening, you know, I was speaking with my husband about it, and it's an unfortunate thing. And, you know, we just feel like there are no answers, like he shouldn't have died. But I think there's a lot of fear, and, like, you know, people are looking for answers and or someone to blame, and there definitely is a double standard. And, you know, I feel like I agree with all the callers in saying that, you know, it's we as white people that speak out on our opinion, and we try to do it in love and in truth, that it's perceived as racism. And growing up in Newark and, you know, having, you know, biracial relatives as well, you know, I can say that on the flip side of that, you know, I grew up as the minority, as the white person, and I had the opposite, you know, end of that, where I was the minority growing up and I was abused, you know. But I agree with our last caller in saying that, you know, I think that we definitely need to ask the Lord for forgiveness. This is not an easy thing. You know, it definitely is a tragedy. I have an 11-year-old son, and if it happened to my son, you know, I don't know. But, you know, I would want answers. And I think
yeah, of course.
Unfortunate.
Yeah, Christine, just to jump in, mm-hmm. The fact of the matter is that, first, every one of us on some level or another is going to be treated wrong or get the short end of the stick. Some people far more than others. Some people far, far more than others.
Right.
I understand that. But yet somehow we have to keep our own spirits clear. That's always the biggest thing, is to keep our own spirit clear. And as far as the Trayvon situation, and I just need to jump in because I'm short on time here. I'm sorry.
Yeah, sure.
But as far as the Trayvon situation, George Zimmerman may have been guilty of racial profiling. Was the man a racist? It seems unlikely, in that he and his wife were tutoring African-American children, according to reports. But if he was a racist, if he was guilty of racial profiling, if there was police cover-up, let the whole thing come out. Let the whole thing be exposed in a court of law. But to use this to exacerbate racial tensions, to me, is a serious error, as, of course, leaders of the NAACP and others have said. And to me, it makes it non-constructive because we can't even address the real issues in our society that we need to address and try to bring help and try to bring healing. My biggest concern remains in all of this, the degeneration of the American family across the board, and a severe attack on the Black American family. What can be done to bring help and healing and restoration? All right, back with your calls. Thanks for being with us.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Friends, there is something important that's happened with a Christian company and pro-gay, anti-Christian backlash in Lexington, Kentucky. I'm not going to have a chance to get to it now. I'll try to get to it at the beginning of the next hour before I interview my friend Arthur Goldberg. But please do listen, and I'll try to fill you in more on that later in the week, 866-34-TRUTH. Also, tomorrow we are re-airing our Mary, Mother of God debate. It got so much attention first time around. I want to re-air it for you tomorrow. Okay, back to the phones. Falake in Silver Springs, Maryland, thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Hi, Dr. Brown. Thank you for having my call.
Sure thing.
And I appreciate you setting a platform up for discussion for this. I don't think we as the body of Christ do it often enough.
Mm-hmm.
I want to address racism because racism is a system of power where a particular group of people have benefited from oppression. Now, Black people cannot be racist because we don't have the power. We can be prejudiced. African Americans can be prejudiced. And I think you talked about the African-American family. Until we deal with what racism has done to African-Americans on the onset of our feet being placed on this land called America, because it's not just something that has just happened overnight. Historically, because of racism and slavery, unlike the Jews who were still able to be with their families, who still maintain their language, traditions, and culture. Everything was taken away. I'm not trying to justify, but
even the idea, though, of men just being producers of children, you know, among slaves. So there's a whole history, and I've talked to Black pastors about those issues. One quick question, though, I want to try to get to a few other callers as much as possible, but the definition of racism that you're using, from what I can tell dictionary wise, that would be a different interpretation when you mentioned prejudice and racism. But I appreciate the insights and the calls and the comments. You bring up a massively important subject we just can't address right now, but it's very important, I affirm that. But very quick, go ahead.
I want to encourage you to look up Dr. Frances Cress-Welsing, and I think she would make the information to you about racism and how it is a system of power and what it does, not just in this country, but globally. The people
Please give me her name again.
Dr. Frances Cress, C-R-E-S-T.
Uh-huh.
Welsing, W-E-L-S-I-N-G.
All right, I'll look it up. Thank you for the call.
Uh-huh, bye-bye.
All right. Okay, Sheba in Bowie, Maryland, thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Yes, thank you, and congratulations to your book being released. I know that must be very exciting, and
it's very exciting. Always,
yeah,
especially when
and
it happens,
I'm excited for you.
When
and
it happens this quick.
I can't wait to get it.
Cool,
but,
thank you.
To go on with the topic, and just like the young lady who just got off the line, my family is very diverse. We have, both of my parents are half white and half Black. And so I've lived on both parts. I've lived on the East Coast and the West Coast for half of my adult life. And I've seen both racisms. And the racisms on the West Coast aren't as harsh as they are here on the East Coast at the Southern Rim. So it's not so much that, and like the one of the callers who I think her name, I think she was up north, but she was talking about we need to forgive. We do forgive. We forgive on a daily basis, you know, but when things like this and riots through the years have come as an onslaught, it's because it's still not being dealt with. Racism is still alive. It is so alive, especially I'm back here in the Maryland area, and it's still alive.
Yeah,
police,
just to jump in, I don't doubt that. That's why I said I made a comment.
And so black people, a lot of them are still very angry, and
that's
what happened with your caller. I heard the call last week as well, and I've been listening to you for a while, and I don't think you meant at all any insult or trying to do racial profiling, but you brought up so many topics and you hit on such a hot topic, and the only one I've heard since is Reverend Price, who tried to address some of these things. And like the young lady said, we have to forgive, but we got to realize that's a process as well. So anyway, thanks again for the opportunity to be able to air some of my
please and I absolutely believe that sadly racism remains alive and well in many different ways and forms here in America. I don't doubt that. And like I said earlier, I don't think we have complete equality in America. So that's my perception. And that's my starting point. But thank you so much for weighing in. All right, friends, if I don't get to you, stay on hold, all right, because Andrew is going to take down your comments for me, all right, because I want to hear from as many of you as I can, but I'm out of time. Okay, Robert in Boston, we're real short on time, but please weigh in quickly. Thank you, sir.
Oh, yes, Michael Brown. It's me, Robert, from Boston. And I am not African-American, by the way. I am black, but I'm from the Dutch island of St. Martin. So it has to come now. So this perspective is coming from a black, but a foreign black.
Yes.
Now, the word white people and black people is very insulting to a lot of blacks. Americans tend to call blacks as if they are all blacks or one. It's not so. And all whites are not one, and that's not so either. I didn't hear any racism in any of your comments in regards to that. We have to look at the situation for what it is and not live off impulse. Number one, I have a license to carry. The person did follow the man, and he
Hey, Robert, just hang on. I've got to run, and unfortunately, don't have time to get into a discussion on the whole tragic killing of Trayvon. And again, let everything come out in a court of law, and let us do our best to hear each other and grow together so that we can be one in Jesus and serve where we need to serve and heal where we need to heal and repent where we need to repent. But thank you for the call. Friends, don't call. We are out of time, but if you're hanging on, Andrew is going to be getting to you in the next couple of minutes, so stay right where you are. Andrew is going to be checking in with you, and you're going to give him the comments you would have given me on the air, okay? So thank you for doing that, because I do want to hear from those that have been holding. Thank you for the input. Thanks for the calls. Look, friends, I am committed to speaking the truth in love regardless of cost and consequence, and I'm committed to hearing from God and from you. If I ever miss it, if I ever fall short, because I want to glorify the Lord, and that's my heart. So thank you for the words of encouragement, affirmation as well. So order right now, The Real Kosher Jesus in paperback, plus my DVD. This is a DVD outreach lecture at Hebrew University on the atoning power of the death of the righteous. You'll find it mind-boggling, eye-opening stuff. My book deals with that as well. And then there's live Q&A, even with some counter-missionaries. $20 postage paid for the book and DVD in paperback, or for the hardcover. You can only get the hardcover from us, The Real Kosher Jesus, the hardcover and the DVD, just $30 postage paid. Call 1-800-278-9978 to order. That's 1-800-278-9978 to order. One more time, 1-800-278-9978. My bottom line today: friends, let's address the problems that truly divide us. Let's address the strongholds that remain. Let us not be afraid to tackle issues that divide us nationally and racially. And let us find solutions to heal and restore. My guest today on the Line of Fire, Arthur Goldberg, a Jewish man who has given his life for a surprising cause.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
There is something that is taking place in Lexington, Kentucky, that should concern all of us here in America. I want to talk to you about that and then bring on a special guest, Arthur Goldberg from Jonah. Say, Jonah, who or what is Jonah? You're about to find out. A Jewish man who has devoted his life to a very surprising cause. Michael Brown, thank you so much for joining us today. 866-34-TRUTH. 866-348-7884. Online, askdrbrown.org. Click on the line of fire. I'm holding in my hands a copy of The Real Kosher Jesus, Revealing the Mysteries of the Hidden Messiah. The book is now out. Yes, amazingly, less than 2.5 months from the day God laid it on my heart to write the book. I'll be telling you more about that later in the broadcast. You can get a copy for yourself. Okay. Here's what happened in Lexington, Kentucky. I carry the burdens I carry because these things are relevant. I carry the burdens I carry because these things are affecting each and every one of us. There is a company, they are a printing branding company in Lexington, known as Hands-On Originals. They were asked to print T-shirts for the 5th annual Lexington Pride event. The owner of the company, as someone wrote to me involved with this, is a very polite, dedicated, kind-hearted Christian. And the subtitle of one of the branches of his company, HandsOnOriginals.com, is Christian Outfitters. When a board member of the Pride Festival called to get a quote on the T-shirts, an employee of Hands On Original, apparently unaware of the nature of the event, initially gave him a quote. However, the owner, when told further details about the event, that it was a gay pride event, said he could not print the shirts in good conscience. And that's when all hell broke loose. The Gay and Lesbian Services Organization immediately filed a discrimination complaint with the city's Human Rights Commission. Well, you can guess how the dominoes fell. The Fayette County Public School System immediately put a hold on all their open orders with Hands-On, a school system that has given them tens of thousands of dollars worth of business annually. Following suit, the University of Kentucky, which has given Hands-On over $200,000 of business since 2010, is also looking for another printing company to handle its needs. The Lexington Pride Board is encouraging the citizens and businesses of Lexington to boycott Hands-On Originals, and now a day-long protest against discrimination is going to be held downtown. This would have taken place last week. The mayor, Jim Gray, now says, "I'm against discrimination, period. It's bad for business for the city. I support the Human Rights Commission in a full and thorough investigation." Well, the fact is you are not allowed to hold to your conscience. You are not allowed to say, I am standing for righteousness in conscience. I cannot print T-shirts for a gay pride event. Sorry. This is the kind of backlash that comes. This is now considered discrimination. I wonder, just curious, if you had a gay-owned printing company and a Christian organization was holding a day-long conference on how homosexual practice is sin and how homosexuals can be changed by the power of the gospel. I wonder if that printing company, gay-owned printing company, declined to print that in good conscience and said, look, we're happy to serve the city, but that violates our conscience and that violates our beliefs, and we simply cannot do that. I wonder if they would be commended as heroic and bold. But a Christian company says we can't print these T-shirts, and now all hell breaks loose against them. We're going to tie this in with my guest, Arthur Goldberg, when we come back.
It's
The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
I'm thrilled to have a special guest on the show with me now, Arthur Goldberg. It's kind of strange how our paths meet. Arthur, religious Jewish background, myself, different spiritual background. There's something that we found in common, though. Many of you know how tremendously burdened I got concerning homosexual activism since about 2004, writing my book, A Queer Thing Happened to America. At the same time, I became concerned deeply about individuals themselves, the homosexual community. It was change really possible. And that's how I came across the important work done by Arthur Goldberg and Jonah. Arthur, welcome to the broadcast. Thanks for joining us today.
You're welcome, sir.
Arthur, first tell our listeners what Jonah stands for.
Okay. Jonah is a traditional Jewish faith-based ministry that serves people of all faiths or no faith in terms of healing sexual woundedness. And Jonah actually is an acronym. Well, Jonah actually means two different things. It's an acronym for the words Jews offering new alternatives for healing, and also represents the prophet Jonah, who, as you well know, was a reluctant prophet, who basically God said, go save the people of Nineveh, which happened to be a non-Jewish city, and with that, he was very reluctant to go and do it. Well, we at Jonah feel that we've been kind of set forth as God's messengers here to try to help people who have unwanted same-sex attractions. We kind of say, why do you cast this burden on us, God? But we do it anyway because it's really important, because there's so few resources out there that people know about. I mean, the problem is that the available resources for healing are so drowned out by the gay activism and the propaganda and the media that it's really difficult to get the message out there to people that change is possible, that people can change, and that no one is born that way, that it's not immutable, it's not, you know, established as set forth and that's it, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, and Arthur, I want to get into a whole lot of topics with you today. I want to also find out about your background and how you got started on this. But I just read a report about Hands On Originals, this company in Lexington, Kentucky, Christian-owned company. They print T-shirts and things like that. When in good conscience, they said they couldn't print T-shirts for a gay pride event. Boycotts called against them, discrimination. They're called guilty of discrimination. The mayor's speaking against them. They could lose hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars. Does that surprise you, Arthur, in the climate in which we live today?
No, it does not. I mean, the same thing has happened in any number of jurisdictions because of really what I would refer to as a homofascism. You have, for example, I'm sure you're familiar with the case of the wedding photographers down
in Mexico.
Of course.
Elaine Photography, yes, sir.
Okay, and they were people who said, as a matter of conscience, you know, hire some other photographer. There's no big deal. There's lots of photographers in town. Go hire someone else to take the pictures of your lesbian wedding.
Right.
And, of course, they got fined by the Human Rights Commission and et cetera, et cetera. There's also been any number of cases of people who have bed and breakfast places, and the bed and breakfast places where, in fact, there's a case that I'm familiar with where, again, it happened to be a Christian couple who said, we don't take any unmarried people in our bed and breakfast. They have to be married people or single people, but the singles have to be in a single room.
Right.
And they got fined heavily because they said, when a gay couple came and said, no, we want to rent a room, he said, well, I wouldn't allow a male and a female who are single to be, this is my home, this is my personal home, it's a bed and breakfast, it's not even a hotel. It's a bed and breakfast place. They got fined. I'm sure you're familiar with in New Jersey the case where the Methodist Camp Association did not want to allow lesbians to have a marriage reception in their facility. Same thing. They lost a tax exemption. for the facility as a religious institution, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So it goes on and on. So this is not a surprise to me, I'm sorry to tell you.
Yeah, and once you have it written into state law that sexual orientation, or now also gender identity, is under laws of discrimination, then if you say, well, in conscience, I can't hire, say, a transgender, you know, a man who dresses as a woman to work in our nursery school, then potentially there's a lawsuit coming against you. Now, Arthur, let's talk about your own background. You've written an important book, Light in the Closet. I want to let our listeners know about that as well. But first, your own background, and then how in the world you come to devote yourself, quite sacrificially at that, to this organization called Jonah. So tell our listeners who you are.
Well, you know, I have a background. I was a businessman. I was a lawyer. I did a lot of things. I used to work for, in congressional work. I've done a lot of different things through my life. But really about, I guess, 12, 13, 14 years ago, I got called into this as a ministry. And because I was fortunate enough to have, at that point, a fairly decent income, I really work for this ministry as a full-time volunteer. I do not get paid for my work. And I came into it really because I was aware of people who were dealing with the question of homosexuality. And you know, I used to, one of my former used to's was I used to be a law professor at the University of Connecticut School of Law. And so I've always been kind of intellectual in terms of looking at the materials and that kind of thing. And I said, gee, I'm a New York, you know, Jewish liberal kid from New York. And I said, gee, let me find out about these people. I've got some time on my hands. Let me find out whether they're born this way, whether they're... Because, again, coming out of New York City in the liberal milieu, it was kind of like, okay, what else did I know except that people were probably born that way? So I started doing some research. The more I started doing research, the more I was aghast, absolutely aghast, at the fact that this was all a propaganda myth.
Mm.
And that it's been gone over and over and over, so that most people really have gotten into this born that way myth. And I've always been somewhat of a political rebel.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in the 1960s, I was down south doing civil rights work. I did voter registration drives. I was on the freedom rides. When I was in law school, I founded the Law Student Civil Rights Research Council. When I was in college, I was one of the founders of SNCC, et cetera, et cetera. And I've just been always very active. And then later, I also founded organizations to free Soviet Jewry when it was particularly unpopular. And so... In at the time, 12, 13, 14 years ago, I'm looking around, I'm saying, well, gee, there's all these Christian organizations, but there's nothing here for traditional Jewish folks, people who, you know, are what we call frum, you know, religiously observant people who believe in the Torah, and there's nothing there. And I can't believe this. And you know, Exodus was way out there like 25, 30 years ago, so too was Courage and Father Harvey. Had done a magnificent job, you know, setting up that organization. The Mormons had Evergreen. I mean, there were a number of different organizations out there, but there's nothing for Jews. And so I started looking around, speaking to some rabbis, speaking to some other people. I contacted NARTH, the National Association for Research and Therapy of Homosexuality, and I said, you know, are there any religiously Jewish therapists floating around that I could talk to about this? They gave me they didn't know whether religiously Jewish, Christian, or whatever. They said, well, here's some therapists in your area.
Uh-huh.
And so I started reaching out, and the more I reached out, the more I said, my God, there's a huge, huge, huge vacuum here. And again, always, you know, having been this kind of, you know, rebel with a cause, I said, okay, I guess God is leading me in a certain direction here. And I had finished my gainful employment time, so I was looking to do something that would be meaningful and give something back to society.
So Arthur, the thing that's fascinating here is that you are attacked as if you are part of the establishment here, discriminating against this hurting gay community, just embracing the mainstream lies against the homosexual community, whereas this is part of your rebelling against the system and going against the grain and fighting for the underdog, isn't it?
Absolutely. And the greatest underdog today is the person who is gay, who does not want to be gay. And again, it's very important to understand that what we're dealing with is people who have unwanted same-sex attractions. I'm not out there as a missionary converting people, grabbing people off the street and saying, oh, my God, you're a terrible guy because, you know, you're dressed that way or whatever. That's not our thing. Our thing is to say, if you are unhappy, we believe in freedom of choice. We believe in diversity, which is consistent with my whole philosophy of where I was in the 1960s fighting for civil rights for African Americans.
Exactly, exactly. And that's obviously what we need to focus on, that this is fighting for the underdog. Right? We come back. Arthur, I want to talk to you about what you discovered in this journey, what you've discovered with the hundreds or thousands of people that you've dealt with unwanted same-sex attraction. We'll be back.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks for joining us, friends, on the broadcast today. My special guest is Arthur Goldberg, co-founder of Jonah, which is an organization devoted to helping people of Jewish faith and people of all faith and people of non-faith with unwanted same-sex attraction. We've got all the information on Jonah on our website, AskDrBrown.org, click on the Line of Fire. Arthur, as you've been engaged with this now 12, 13 years, what would you say are some of the biggest myths that are being put over on this generation and put over to the point that when you challenge it, you're considered a hate group if you even challenge these things these days? What are some of the biggest myths that are out there regarding homosexuality?
Well, there's a lot of myths. Certainly, what they're teaching in the school systems, for example, is something that really aggravates me to no extent. I mean, the kind of things that are being taught in the school systems, and I think that any of your listeners really ought to be aware and check the curriculums, what they're teaching in the health courses and that kind of thing. And I'm talking in elementary school discussions, including kindergartens or even in preschools. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are all sorts of books out there, for example, that are, you know, like Heather Has Two Mommies and Simon Has Two Daddies and all that kind of thing. But there's also just in general, for example, there's a play that is given a lot called Jesse's Dream Skirt, where one of the skits features a transsexual boy in the hero role. Mm. And this is in many, many schools all across the country. And the boy wears a dress, and he wears high heels, and he talks approvingly about cross-dressing. And then the poem around which the skit is constructed, if I may, let me read to you the poem. It's pretty short. It says, "So let them say I'm like a girl. What's wrong with being like a girl? And let them jump and jeer and whirl. They are the swine. I am the pearl. Mm-hmm. And let them laugh and let them scream. They'll be beheaded when I'm queen, when I rule the world. When I rule the world, when I rule the world in mommy's high heels." That's being given out to kids who don't even understand anything about sexuality.
Yeah, things that as extreme as that just sounded, things like that and others, if that gets pulled or something else used that are just as extreme, or put things in other words to make it that if you just think mommies and daddies are normal, or male and female are normal, that you're somehow bigoted, intolerant, dangerous, homophobe to be rejected. So what's being taught in schools, let's list some of the myths then, that people are born that way. Myth.
Correct.
True or false?
Absolutely false.
All right, that people cannot change.
Absolutely false.
That there is nothing to do with upbringing and temperament in terms of why some people are same-sex attracted.
Again, false. I mean, the fact of the matter is there are proven risk factors, or what some people call causes. I prefer calling them risk factors, as to what can lead someone to have unwanted same-sex attractions. And not everybody who has these will act out this way. They may act out in different ways. For example, someone may become a heterosexual, a male may become a heterosexual sex addict to try to prove his sense of masculinity, as opposed to a person who's dealing with homosexuality, who's doing the exact same thing, but he's acting it out in a different way. So let me try to explain some of the potential risk factors. I mean, ultimately, what you're really dealing with is a person who envies, let's take a male, there's twice as much male homosexuality as there is female. So I'm going to talk generally in the male genre, although obviously a lot of it applies to females. When a male looks at another male and he's homosexual, in truth what he's doing, he's envying something characteristic about that other person. Maybe physical, maybe emotional, maybe personality, but he's envying something. And then he sexualizes or eroticizes the envy and believes that if I can take this person inside of me, I can be just like him. However, it's the myth of him. It's the facade. It's the mask that he's viewing the guy with. In psychological terms, we call this a transference or a projection. He's looking at him in a different way than the guy is in reality, which is why, by the way, there is such promiscuity in the gay world. I mean, statistically, I'm sure you're aware of this, Michael, that less than 1% of male gay couples are sexually monogamous.
Right. Yeah, in terms of long-term relationships.
In terms of long-term relationships. There's studies after studies on this. The most famous of it is the male couple that was done in the mid-1980s, where they actually examined 156 couples who had lived together for 20 years or more. They found that not one of those couples, and this was a study done by gays, by the way, not one of those couples were monogamous for the full 20 years. The longest period of sexual monogamy was 5 years, and the average was somewhere between 1.5 to 2 years.
Right. So I think an important point you make is that if a man is attracted to a woman, he may be attracted in terms of physicality, he may be attracted to many other things about her, but she is still different than he is.
Right.
Because
we
male,
tend to
female.
Be attracted to our opposites.
Right. Or so male, female, female, male. But if it's male, male, or female, female attraction, you were talking about male, male, there's almost a mirror thing with the attraction. So you say that there's something they're looking for or seeking to complete themselves with or something like that. But these are, in other words, these are patterns that have been observed over a period of years. And I want to talk about more of the patterns. We come back on the other side of the break. But Arthur, I constantly hear from listeners who have family members with same-sex attraction that a kid now comes to the parents and says, I'm 16 and I'm gay. And the parents come to me and they say, is change possible? Now, you're looking at this through the lens of Jewish faith, but also through the lens of non-faith in terms of some of the people that come to you.
And Christians as well. We have a lot of Christians that come to us.
Right. But just across the board, Arthur, I mean, be candid. I don't want you to play with my listeners' emotions. Is change really possible? Do you actually hear of people changing their orientation and even getting married heterosexually and being happy? Do you actually hear of this happening?
Absolutely, yes. There's no question about it. In fact, there's a website, which is not ours, run by an organization of people who is run entirely by people who are what are called ex-gays. It's called peoplecanchange.com. I just came back from facilitating a weekend for them where honestly, there are thousands, literally thousands and thousands of people who have successfully changed. And the question always becomes is, what does change mean? And there's two elements or two different alternatives of change. Mm-hmm. If someone does deep enough work, healing work, the absolute possibility of change is that it will never, you know, come back again. It will be gone. But that, you know, and that's in probably maybe half the cases. In the other half of the cases, the feelings become so minimized that the feeling may come back only in times of great stress where you kind of reach back for the comfortable old shoe. But even then, what happens is you now have the tools at your disposal, so you don't go there. It's kind of like the guy who's an obese guy.
Arthur, tell you what, I just got to jump in because we got a break here. But the fact is, change can come, so there's freedom, and that which used to dominate no longer dominates.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
My special guest today, Arthur Goldberg, co-founder of Jonah, which is an organization, Jewish and non-faith and multi-faith as well, devoted to helping people with unwanted same-sex attraction. Arthur has been a law professor, lawyer, businessman. He's fought for the underdog. He was involved in civil rights in the 60s. He was fighting for Soviet Jews when it wasn't possible or when it wasn't popular. And he is now giving himself for the ultimate underdog, the people who in a certain level could have the least privileges and the most discrimination and odds coming against them more than anybody else. And it is people with unwanted same-sex attraction, people who say, I don't want to have a gay or lesbian identity or lifestyle. I want to change. And his organization is there to say change is possible. And it started in particular helping Jewish people. Arthur, thanks again for joining us on the broadcast today.
You're welcome, Michael. I would like to go back for one moment to some of the question of causes of homosexuality, which I think it may be helpful. There's a pattern here. The pattern basically is that typically...
And for those just tuning in, we're saying categorically that there is no scientific, reputable evidence that people are born gay, born with same-sex attraction, or born with bisexual attraction, or born transgender for that issue, for that matter. But we're focusing on the issue of homosexuality and causes of it. And there's the question of nature versus nurture, and are there upbringing issues or temperamental issues or things in one's environment that can be what Arthur calls risk factors or potential causes of homosexuality. And Arthur, when you've dealt with enough people, you've obviously seen a lot of patterns come up over and over and over again.
Absolutely. And a lot of this, by the way, we have a lot of stories on our website, which is jonahweb.org, jonahweb.org. A lot of stories of individuals who said, I've changed and here's what my story is. So we must have 50, 75, 100 different stories up on our website. I'm not sure exactly even how many that people write us. But what these risk factors generally involve is, I'm just going to use the male as an example, and the female is kind of the opposite, but there's a few extra factors involved for females sometimes. But for a male, for example, he may be detached from his father. It's a very typical pattern. Or he may be over-enmeshed or involved with his mother. Again, a very typical pattern. He may have sibling wounds. He may have peer wounds. And depending upon which school of thought one is involved with, Dr. Nicolosi, for example, will say he's never met a person that didn't have some kind of parental wounding. On the other hand, Dr. Van Ardwig from the Netherlands says he's never met someone that is involved in this behavior or fantasy without having same-sex peer wounding, that the other kids growing up basically, you know, wounded him enough that he was looking to fill an unfilled need. So you have a number of those kind of things. Body image wounds is another classic. And I'm too tall, I'm too short, I'm too fat, I'm too thin. I feel different. And what the gay activists have done is they've reinterpreted this and saying, oh, the reason that you feel different is because it's all, you know, internalized homophobia. But they've totally mixed up the cause and the effect. They've made the effect the cause the effect. I mean, it's crazy.
So, Arthur, what about the argument that the reason these kids say the kid didn't bond properly with the father or was too close to the mother or had the wounds from peers was because the person really was born gay, and that's why all these other things happened? How would you respond to that?
I'd say there's no scientific evidence whatsoever that anyone was born gay. You know, the gay activists have tried to prove this over and over again, and one of the classic disabusing of that notion is by looking at several different identical twin studies that they have done.
Yes.
They have tried to show, and you know, if let me put it another way.
We'll come back to identical twins after the break. Also, Arthur has written a very important book called Light in the Closet. I want to talk about Light in the Closet, bringing this from a traditional Jewish perspective. We'll talk about what the rabbis have to say about this as well. Stay with us.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
I want to go straight back to my guest, Arthur Goldberg, co-founder of Jonah, Jews Offering New Alternatives for Healing, nonprofit international organization dedicated to educating the worldwide Jewish community about the social, cultural, and emotional factors which lead to same-sex attraction. Jonah works directly with those struggling with unwanted same-sex sexual attractions and with families whose loved ones are involved in homosexuality. The website, jonahweb.org. I encourage my Christian friends to go there because it'll give you Jewish perspective on this. There are letters from leading rabbis about that. And then Arthur's important book, Light in the Closet, Torah, Homosexuality, and the Power to Change. Arthur, right before the break, we were talking about the studies of identical twins that have been done. And based on those studies, you said this provides very strong evidence that people are not born homosexual. Expand on that if you could.
Yes. If you have a set of identical twins, they share the same gene. If they share the same gene pool, and if gay is genetic, that means if you have a set of identical twins, both twins should be gay.
Right.
Right? That's the concordance.
Pretty simple. Yep.
Pretty simple logic. Okay. There have been 5-6 different studies done on identical twins. The most favorable one toward the gay activist position of born that way was done by Bailey out at Northwestern, and he had a 52% concordance rate, which means 48% were not concordant.
Right.
And he did not have a random or blind study. The study that he had was by advertising in the gay newspapers, "Would identical twins please come forward?"
Right.
The more typical studies after that are running in the 5%, 6%, 8%, 4%, I mean, way down there in single-digit numbers.
Right, and some have now involved thousands of identical twins, major studies done in different countries, and Neil Whitehead has analyzed them carefully, read thousands of studies on same-sex attraction, and concluded we're dealing with, you know, maybe in a 10 or 11% concordance rate, so something is not lining up there. Hey, Arthur, do you mind if we take a call with someone that wants to probe this a little further?
Sure.
All right, let's do that. When I do interviews, a lot of times I don't take many calls at all, so I can kind of hog the time with my guest. But let's just take one call on this. Ken in Denver, Colorado, thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Well, thank you for what you're talking about today.
Surely.
My question is I'm kind of an analytical person and everything. I lost my family. I'm not homosexual, but at the same time, I can understand it to a degree. You know, I don't completely approve of it, but at the same time. But my thing is, in high school, I got into biology and genetics, mm-hmm. And I found out, according to my teacher back then, that you take a half wolf and a half shepherd and made it with a full-blooded shepherd, somewhere along the line, you're going to get a wolf. And that's why when you mentioned genetics, I wanted to get your take on that.
Well, I'm not sure how that applies to the issue of someone becoming homosexual, because if
well,
if
you're saying becoming homosexual.
I'm sorry?
I'm saying, they were saying it because of the genetics and everything, that
that over a period of time, that the intersection of genes and certain things would produce a certain biological result. So, Arthur, I imagine your point would be that we still have no scientific evidence that there's actually such a thing as someone born homosexual.
There's no study. There's not one study out there that shows that this is genetic. And again, you mentioned Neil Whitehead. He has a beautiful, you know, he's done books on this. He's done websites. There's not one. I'm sorry, Ken. There's no evidence whatsoever that people are born gay. Doesn't exist.
Yeah, and the fact is, if we could actually determine people were born gay, then we could ask the question, why are they born gay? But we haven't determined that, and all scientific evidence has gone in the other direction. So thanks, Ken, for the question. In fact, Arthur, one of the strongest evidences that there's no scientific evidence for it is that gay studies are still being done. If the great proof had been found, I mean, we heard years ago it was genes, and then we hear afterwards, no, it's biology. Now it's something that happens in the womb with, you know, with lack of hormonal, you know, bath or something on the, and then you know we keep hearing other things. People are still looking.
The fact keep is, changing. They keep changing the tune.
Right, and then you know the other question, Arthur, is that ultimately we are dealing with behavior and desire. And you know, there's some scientists who say that they've discovered an obesity gene. Let's say that's true. What do we do? Do we celebrate obesity, or do we say, you know, there are problems with obesity. Let's try to help this person even more. So this is not a matter of us trying to point fingers as much as just trying to be helpful and trying to be honest. And many of our listeners will not be as familiar with the Jewish perspectives on this, the traditional Jewish perspectives on homosexuality or the possibility of change, but on your website, jonahweb.org, you have letters, endorsements, statements from many leading Jewish figures. How do they feel about what you're doing? How does the traditional Jewish community feel about an organization like Jonah?
The traditional Jewish community is very much in favor. Now, the Reform Jews and the the Reform Jews are certainly opposed to what we do. The mm-hmm. conservative Jews are kind of split, but the Orthodox community is, in general, very, very much on our side. In fact, we had a recent declaration that a number of rabbis, I'm a signatory myself of, and a number of Orthodox rabbis have signed. It's called the Torah Declaration. It can be found at .org, TORAHDEC.org. And there's over 200 people who have signed it, major leading rabbis and others that have basically set forth the position that people can change. And you asked about what is the traditional Torah position. I mean, one of the things that is unfortunately very misunderstood is the famous Leviticus 18:22. Man shall not lie, man, it is an abomination. The Hebrew word that is generally translated as abomination is the word to'eva. The word in the Talmud, which is the oral law, the word to'eva very clearly is set forth as it's in this volume called Nedarim 51a, where it says it stands for the words to'e ataba, which means in English, you have been led astray. You have been led astray has a whole different level of meaning and understanding than abomination. Whole different, it's more than a nuance, it's a total different change. And if you have been led astray or mistaken, whether it be Christianity or Judaism, you do teshuvah, which is the word repentance or return. And what do you do when you do repentance? You basically understand the past, you change present patterns of feelings, of thoughts, and of behaviors, and then in the future, you internalize the new thoughts. Well, guess what? That's exactly what you do in the process of psychology. Exactly the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
So the Jewish perspective is very akin to what the modern secular world says about how people make changes.
It's very interesting.
This is not rocket science.
Yeah, very, very interesting. You know, so in point of fact, the Hebrew word toeva, which is translated abomination, which, you know, that would just be based on the Hebrew ta'av and to detest, and toeva, something detestable, that the rabbinic tradition then puts a certain interpretation on it to emphasize ultimately, especially in this case, that we're dealing with a behavioral pattern, the solution to which is repentance. So obviously repentance is something God-based, God helps us repent. But in point of fact, the process of recognizing something is wrong, taking steps to go in another direction, and developing a new way of life, you're saying that's the path of psychology as well. Now, there was a rabbi, the chief rabbi of Amsterdam, who doesn't live in Amsterdam, actually, but mm-hmm. functions as the chief rabbi of Amsterdam, signed his name to the Torah Declaration. And what happened to him when he did that, Arthur?
The Amsterdam community wanted to fire him. He was suspended from his job. And only because the Council of European Rabbis, the London Beth Din, and Aguda Israel in the United States all sent letters to the Orthodox community in Amsterdam, the Netherlands, saying, you guys do this, and you know, we can't consider you part of the Jewish community anymore because this is your chief rabbi who's speaking biblical truth.
All right, so I talked about it when
it happened. Anyway, he got reinstated.
Yeah, I talked about it when it happened, Arthur. But I just want to underscore this. We've got about a minute before the break, but I want to underscore this. This is the Orthodox Jewish community of Amsterdam, and they wanted to fire their rabbi because he signed a declaration teaching, affirming traditional Torah Judaism.
Absolutely.
Does that indicate how much political pressure is on people and how PC this thing has become?
Absolutely. It's totally political pressure. And the gays have done a very effective job. The gay activists have done a very effective job in terms of moving from the less traditional into the more traditional. And that's whether it's in Christianity or Judaism or any other religion, Buddhist, whatever. Because if you notice, you have the same thing like Bishop Robinson, for example, and you got a whole bunch of things.
Episcopal Church, right? The movement to infiltrate the religious community and change hearts, friends. It's coming your way. We come back with Arthur. I want to talk about the importance of what happens when marriage is redefined and his book, Light in the Closet.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks, friends, for joining us. My special guest the last 45 minutes, which has just gone flying by, Arthur Goldberg, co-founder of Jonah International. Jonah is Jews offering new alternatives for healing. His book, which is unique, I've read massively in this area when I wrote A Queer Thing Happened to America. His book stands unique. Arthur Goldberg, Light in the Closet, Torah, Homosexuality, and the Power to Change. You can get it at the Jonah website, jonahweb.org, the book Light in the Closet. Arthur, I can't believe 45 minutes has flown by as quickly as it has, but no surprise, really. The last e-blast that went out from Jonah came last night, this morning. It was very moving and very disturbing. It was a story about a very popular gay man, good-looking, well-built, that's part of the story. And he had just finished a manuscript that he had worked on diligently about being happy after 40. He himself was now getting past 40. He had not seen many gay men age well. And he was an encourager. He was a positive guy. He made people's days light up when they were down, and he was so full of hope for the second half of his life, and then he commits suicide, and the publisher has stopped the manuscript from being published. A tragic story. What is this, Arthur, about gay men not aging well? I mean, not that they're all committing suicide, obviously not, of course not, we're not saying that, but what can we learn from this tragic story?
Homosexuality, unfortunately, is a very youth-oriented culture. And, in fact, one of the clients that I counseled who actually made the change from gay to straight, I asked him, why do you want to change? And he said, because I'm sick and tired of being a perpetual adolescent.
Hmm.
And that phrase has stuck in my head ever since, and he said this to me maybe 8 or 10 years ago. The fact of the matter is that he expanded it one step further. He said, the average straight man, the guy came to me in his 30s, he says, the average straight man in his 30s, getting married, having kids, moving on his professional career, all my gay friends, they're enjoying life, they're going to Europe, they're going to Hawaii, they're having parties, and they have no responsibilities. And this was, and that's an over-exaggeration, obviously.
Right.
But that was his perception. And there's such a youth-oriented culture, The problem in a lot of the guys who come to me, they also say, I'm 40, 42, 45 years old. I used to be the object of the pickup in the bars. Now I have to go pick up other younger guys. The focus has changed. So now they're sitting in the bar, drinking their drink, smoking their cigarette alone.
Hmm.
I mean, it's a terrible, terrible situation because of this whole emphasis on a youth-oriented culture.
And certain aspects of physicality and things like that
They're into bodybuilding. They're into all sorts of things because they feel that they're not man enough. Again, it goes back to what I said earlier in the program of there's a sexualized envy here. They're always trying to become something that, somehow improve their sense of self because in the final analysis, homosexuality really, at its bottom line, is a lack of self-esteem, self-confidence, self-worth.
Yeah, and Arthur, I know the price you've paid doing what you do. I know that you do this gratis for Jonah. I know the flack you've come under. I know the attacks against your person you've come under. I know the attacks against your organization. Unless you really cared, unless you really cared about people and were really committed to doing what was right for them, you wouldn't do what you do. I know that for a fact, and it's a joy to have you as a coworker. We've got 1 minute, Arthur, but you're speaking to listeners across the country, but all over North Carolina right now. We've got a marriage amendment coming up May 8th where we can vote. We're the only southern state that does not have a marriage amendment saying that in our Constitution, marriage is the union of one man, one woman. Why is it important for North Carolinians to stand up and vote on May 8th?
It's important because it's important to be able to have a societal aspect of what is traditional and what works. One man, one woman, one lifetime is really what was intended by God, number one, and in fact will produce the greatest amount of happiness for an individual.
Yeah, and in fact, thank you, Arthur. You bottom lined it wonderfully well. And in fact, what is put forth here in the amendment is also going to strengthen what's taught in our schools and what becomes understood as right and best in our society. Arthur, I wish you the best in what you're doing. Whatever we can ever do to stand together and help, it's our joy to do it. JonahWeb.org, the website, the book, Light in the Closet. Arthur, thanks again for being with us today.
If anyone has any really pressing questions, they can feel free to call me at 201-433-3444. That's 201-433-3444. I'm particularly interested in anyone that is struggling with unwanted same-sex attraction or a parent or friend or spouse.
Arthur, that's very gracious of you to do that, but that's who you are, and we'll get that number out as well. Thank you so much. Hey, can you remember a guest that gave you a number to call saying if you're struggling, give me a call? Do you remember someone saying that? If you're struggling, give me a call. If you're struggling with same-sex attraction, you have a family member struggling, call us. That's why I commend Arthur Goldberg. We have different religious beliefs on many issues, but we are absolutely united on this. So appreciation to Arthur. Hey, Andrew or Joey, just shoot me that number so we can put it up on our website as well. Okay. I'm holding in my hands, as we change subjects, I'm holding in my hands with great excitement, with special excitement, my book, The Real Kosher Jesus. It just came out, just got the copy shipped to us today, a day in advance of when it was supposed to be printed. The Real Kosher Jesus, Revealing the Mysteries of the Hidden Messiah. From the back cover, Eric Metaxas, New York Times bestselling author of Bonhoeffer, Pastor, Martyr, Prophet, Spy. Any Jew or Gentile who wants to know who the real Jesus is need look no further. Sid Roth, will the real kosher Jesus please stand up? Is he a great Jewish rabbi or is he the Son of God? Now we know the truth, thanks to this groundbreaking book. And Rabbi Shmuley, Mike and I have so much history in religious, historical, and social values debate that we have gone beyond being only respectful public adversaries to being friends with deep affection between us, even as we disagree passionately on the issues. God bless you, Mike, and I look forward to many more debates. That's from the back cover of the book, more full endorsements on the inside. The paperback version, you can get this, plus my outreach lecture at the Hebrew University. I was, from what I was told, the most prominent Messianic Jew to deliver an outreach message lecture, anything of its kind, at Hebrew University in Jerusalem, with open mic audience Q&A afterwards. The book in DVD, just $20, postage paid. All right? If you want to get the hardcover, we are the only ones with a hardcover edition. The book and DVD, just $30, postage paid. But call today to order 1-800-278-9978. That's 1-800-278-9978. One more time, 1-800-278-9978. Or you can order online. Just go to askdrbrown.org and click on the line of fire. In today's program, you'll have all the details to order your copy of The Real Kosher Jesus. I believe it is the most significant Jewish outreach tool we've ever produced. My bottom line today, we've heard from a Jewish man who has devoted years of his life to helping people, Jew and Gentile alike, with unwanted same-sex attraction. And he has said that people can change. Thousands have changed. Friends, there is hope for healing and restoration.